My name is Brian Lee O'Malley, and I do a comic called Scott Pilgrim. And I guess you could say it's manga influenced. So I think that's why I'm on the panel. I also read some manga once in a while. And I own a lot of Japanese manga that I can't actually read.
Well, so basically, in short, he is the Canadian representative of international manga.
And Becky.
My name is Becky Clunan. Let me see. I did some work with Tokyo Pop, East Coast Rising, and I've worked with Vertigo on American Virgin and Demo. I the same thing, I guess. I read a lot of manga growing up. I started like reading like Rango and Half and stuff. And since then, I kind of read off and on. I don't know. Myself is manga influenced, but yeah, that's... I don't know.
Hi, I'm Eric Cole. I work with Udon, and then we publish a lot of mangas, manhwas, and comic books from all over the world. That we have like Korean manhwa line, and we have a very special book that's actually a manga, the very first manga from Hong Kong that has won the Japanese International Award. And then also we are doing some mangas, and especially right now we just launched our manga for kids line, which is the first, you know, for North America that is mangas targeted for younger children.
Okay. I'm Antoine Dede. I come from a little town from near Paris, and I done this book. It's Armel. It's about Armel, and it's I have a lot of inspiration from manga, mostly by about the storytelling, and my drawing is like a mix between manga stuff and French stuff, I think. Well.
My name is Jason Thompson. I wrote Manga the Complete Guide, an encyclopedia for which I read every manga translated into English.
That seems to be a fun job.
It was until the 10,000 volume or something?
It was until months, until the 12th month. Nothing but reading and eating manga. But yeah, I've also done a lot of editing work for Viz and Del Rey, and I have a graphic novel coming out in next year from Del Rey called King of RPGs.
So the first question I'm going to throw out there is, what do you love about manga, and what's your pet peeve about manga? Anyone want to start?
Start from that end and work backwards.
Okay.
My pet peeve of manga is, is the formulaic manga. The manga that, the manga that really, really seems, does not add anything to what's come before. And, someone's always discovering manga new for the first time. Someone, every manga is original because they haven't seen, they haven't seen another manga where like a young boy vows to become stronger and trains and fights somebody. Or there's another manga where girls are hitting on guys, like nerdy guys for no apparent reason. My pet peeve is a lack of originality, and what really inspires me is when I do see a truly original manga, the first time I saw the work of what's his name? The guy who did Chikyu Misaki, or Eiichiro Oda, or Hirohiko Araki.
Ichiwahara.
Thank you.
Woohoo!
Oh, dude, I'm so
smart crap.
So or Moyoko Ono. Yeah, or Fumiyoshi Naga. Just seeing people who are sui generis, or is that how it's pronounced?
I don't know any French.
Okay. I only know how to pronounce words as if they were Japanese words.
Latin.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. Originality is the key.
Very good. Anyone else want to take that one up? Pet peeve, any misconceptions about manga, anything that you think people don't get about manga that you'd like to clear up?
I think in general, you know, I think a lot of you guys here are manga readers, but in general, that when I go to like book expos, you know, book shows, we talk to regular people who are not manga readers, they always feel that manga equals Naruto. I have people coming up to our booths like, is this Naruto? I said, no, this is not. But this is kind of like a Naruto version of Wizard of Oz. And it's like, what, but, you know, do you have Naruto? I said, no, over there, Viz has a booth over there, they have Naruto. And then it was like, yeah, but why don't you do Naruto? And it's like, it's basically like, you got a pack of tissue paper and you call this Kleenex. And then, you know, you have Kleenex. It's the same kind of idea now with a lot of people. Manga equals Naruto. And a lot of people doesn't seem to understand that, you know, manga has a big variety of stuff. You know, we can have, you know, classic stories retold, we can have some fantasy stuff, we can have, you know, like sports manga. That's something that's like totally, people can't figure out. It's like, what, really, sports comics? It's like, what is it? Is the different genre in manga that actually makes the difference, that this is something different. In American comics, you know, there are a lot of independent comics, but then the variety of genre is just not as wide as it is, in, you know, that we can get in the manga field.
Let me throw this out to the creators who are here. Are you pleased or are you annoyed when people refer to your work as being global manga or influenced by manga?
Most people don't refer to my work as manga. I'm maybe a little bit annoyed if someone calls it manga because I just don't understand. I just call it comics, or when I'm talking about my own book, I just call it my book. So it's like, but I like manga, but I don't feel like I do manga exactly.
Yeah, I agree, I think. I've worked with Tokyopop, which did, you know, they were a licensing company first, they were publishing a lot of Japanese books, and then they started an original line that they called like the original English language line.
Oh, yeah,
and it was totally like there was all this internet like hubbub about it. And so my editor there, he was looking at my work on demo, which was he was calling it more indie looking, and he's like, can you make it more manga looking? And I was like, well, I guess I'll make it more full bleed, because that was the only thing I could really think of to make my work, I mean, besides really changing the style a little bit. But and then I started working with Vertigo, and my editor was looking at my book with Tokyopop, and she's like, this looks great, but can you make the book for Vertigo look less manga? And so I didn't do it fully. That was kind of like, I mean, it was, you know, I mean, there was a little bit of difference.
In like, some sense, yes, I can see that, because like growing up reading both American comics and, you know, Japanese comics, basically you can see that, you know, the storytelling is different.
Yeah.
You know, with American comics, you normally only has 22 pages each month to tell a story, so everything is more tight, everything's more condensed. From panel to panel, the storytelling is a little bit more segregated.
Yeah, it's so much less, sort of like compressed. Like with the Japanese stuff, you get a lot of decompression.
Yeah, you can
really cool.
you can pretty much like, you know, spend 10 pages on a running sequence of a character to show how exhausted he is.
You can have like 3 pages of someone just like taking off their glasses, and it can be like a really moving scene just in that.
Yeah.
But you can't really do that with the American comics.
I was obsessed with this when I was like 19. There was this one manga called GGG by Kotobuki, and it was there's 6 pages that were all 2-page spreads of just a dude taking his sword out. And the sword was like so big. It was like spread. I thought that was amazing. I was obsessed.
Thanks for sharing.
Antoine, would you like to take that on?
Question? Manga for me just another name from Japanese to call this comics, and with my publisher I'm quite free about how many pages I have, so I don't
I
should
tell
you
a problem because my recorders
that. Yeah, I think mainly, you know, like it's already been branded that, you know, the Asian stuff, most of the black and white stuff, people already figure out that this is manga. Which, honestly, you know, manga is just a word in Japan, much like the word comics here in English. So it's pretty much like, what exactly is manga? Manga is comics. So that has been like the forever debate online, you know, like, manga, comics, what's the difference? Actually, to me, I really feel that there's no difference. It's just comic books. But I'd rather be saying that, you know, like it's just using comic books as a medium, much like, you know, when you say movies or eiga, you know, like in Japan. So like, but nobody says Japanese movie is called eiga, but Japanese movie is called movies. So I think, you know, it's like some kind of way that we can actually kind of steer it back that, you know, it's just in general, comic book is just a medium for us creators, you know, to tell stories, to tell different stories. I think that would be more of the way to look at it.
Yeah, I think manga, I mean, the word to me always kind of describes more a format. So when someone says, oh, it's like a manga style book, like, you know, if someone's
more like black and white,
Pilgrim, like, yeah. I, you know, if someone said, oh, it's like manga style, I would think not necessarily in the style that it's drawn, but in the style that it's printed. So it's smaller and it's black and white. And
definitely in America, yeah.
That's how
booksellers and librarians, it just kind of became a buzzword. So that's one of the reasons that Scott Pilgrim is the size and shape that it is, for sure. Because people might buy it.
Isn't it because you want to draw it smaller so it's faster?
That was one reason, but now I draw it bigger, so it's not faster anymore.
So what do you think is the biggest problem with the term global manga? I mean, is it limiting? Is it offer new possibilities? Is anyone have any thoughts on that? Is there anything that international manga comics creators can teach, for example, Japanese manga creators? Anything new that they can
offer? I actually work with a lot of Japanese creators because of, you know, the work of Udon that we license and publish stuff, and we also do creative service stuff that if some of you might know that we're very heavily involved in the Street Fighter projects. So when we work with Japanese creators, what they found out about us doing American comics versus, you know, like Japanese comics is our comics is always in color. And that's something that they found very fascinating because of the speed and the way things are done in Japan. They're so used to comics being a black and white thing versus a color thing. So right now, you know, there are more and more creators testing out doing comics in color, which is something that's more of a trend from the West going back to the East. But also they have a term for American comics called Amecomi, which is a short form of American comics, much like we call their books manga here. Yeah.
Sorry, I lost my train of thought. I'm going to go get that guy. Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I just, I'm reading the question, you forgot it.
Yeah, please do.
Do global comics creators have something to teach Japanese manga creators?
I don't know anything about Japanese creators except, like, I've never been to Japan. I've never really met a Japanese comic artist, so I don't think that I have anything to teach them. I don't think they would look at my work and see it as really any good. That's just because I'm like, I don't know, I have an unhealthy respect for Japanese creators. I think they're way better.
No, when a movie becomes a hit, they will look at you different. They would maybe think that you do better. There's nothing. Like, look at Dragon Ball.
Yeah, I kind of feel like everyone, I mean, we have stuff to learn from, like, anybody. Like, I mean, take, like, European comics and, like, you know, comics from all over the world. There's something that you can learn from every style of comics. And I don't think it just works one way. But, you know, at the same time, too, I don't really feel like looking at comics is the best way to better yourself as a comic artist. And I always felt like looking at comics would just, I mean, it's kind of like incestual, you know? Like, you're looking at comics to create comics, you should be looking outside of comics to, like, for inspiration, because you're just going to keep on making the same stuff over and over and over if you just look at
comics for how to make comics, and you look at other stuff for what to put in those comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have a lot of Japanese comics that I can't read, but that I love looking at.
Yeah, but then when you actually read them, sometimes they're
sometimes they're stupid. But, so, you know, it's just, it's the language of comics, like the panels and the where the balloons are placed and all this kind of stuff that we care about and no one else cares about.
How would you like to take that one? Especially since you use both European and Asian influence and Western influence.
Oh, yes, actually. I don't know.
I mean, when you do comics in France,
yes,
the stuff I've seen from France has been, like, you know, it's oversized. It's, like, the stuff I see usually. It's like bigger.
Oh, yes. But,
you print a little bit bigger, and there's more panels on a page, like generally speaking.
Yeah, generally speaking, but there is more and more influenced by the manga in the publication, so there is now. I'm working now on a collection with my publisher, and he's doing with only French people this size of books.
Nice.
And so they want to have like this trademark manga and books because the manga are successful. So and actually, I take a lot of code of the smash of the storytelling from manga to do my stuff. And that's look a little bit like that.
So how does manga influence the European market? Because I know that before America has this big manga boom going on, manga is already very popular in Europe.
Yes,
for all these years.
So I've heard that the second market was for manga is in France actually, and because we used to have like a TV show, very stupid TV show, when I was a child, and there is a lot of animation from Japan, like Dragon Ball and Saint Seiya and stuff like that. And because of that TV show, manga become very popular in France, and now in the bookshop you can find mostly manga. There's a little spot for French stuff.
I visited Paris a few months ago, and I was really surprised. Well, first of all, comics in general are way bigger in culture there.
Yeah.
And then manga is huge, and there's so much more stuff. They have all 22 volumes of 20th Century Boys. I have a lot of French comics because I can read French. So I read Nana before it got published in English and stuff, and I felt so cool. But like he was saying about the anime, it's the same in Canada. I think Sailor Moon was really popular in the mid-90s, and it was more here than in the U.S., I think.
I feel like they might have canceled for something in the U.S., and then
they
kept running.
They ran
in
here.
Canada, and people were trading VHS tapes.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I heard something about being censored, and a lot of people complain about the whole Sailor Moon transformation sequence.
Yeah. No, I was obsessed. Aliens. That's how I got it.
You're obsessed with the transformation sequence?
No, I was not.
Thanks for sharing.
But I was obsessed with Sailor Moon. That was another thing. That's what first got me into manga in general.
That actually kind of brings me to a question I want to ask all of you. What was your first exposure to manga, and what really impressed you about when you first exposed to it?
Rama.
Do tell. What excited you about it? What did you like about it?
It was so weird. And insane.
Can you explain what Rama 1/2 is to be?
Okay, Rama 1/2 is by Rumiko Takahashi, and it's a comic about a guy who's a martial artist who falls in a magical well,
a magical spring.
That makes him turn into a girl every time he gets splashed by water, cold water. And then hot water turns him back to a boy.
No, it was the other way around. Hot water.
No, hot water turns him back to a boy.
Hot water is the cure.
Yeah.
And then every other character ends up with different curses that change into different things. It went on for 38 volumes, and it's just it's crazy.
It's one of the craziest manga I've ever read too, and the concept is so interesting and innovative that they it's all these martial artists, they fight each other, they like to track down each other in fights, but then the thing is they all end up being in this weird Chinese place with all these little wells of water ponds going on, and it's like the ponds of the curses, because they each pond supposedly has drowned something. So Ranma accidentally falls into the one that's drowned a woman, so when you got wet, it becomes a woman. There's other characters that fall into different ponds that would turn them into a pig, into a cat, into a bird and everything. And if you guys don't know what Ranma is, go hunt it down. It's really good.
But mostly it's a romantic comedy. Mostly it's about it's about a four-way love triangle. The guy can transform into a guy and a girl.
Yeah, it completely changed my life. That's nice. Listening to rock and roll for the first time.
Yeah, it would come out in issues. So I remember Viz was publishing it as issues back in the day, and it read almost like a Sunday strip because it was so simple, I guess, in the storytelling. It was just anyone can get it, black and white, and there's always a punchline at the end. It was just this great little gag strips that you could just pick up every morning.
Yeah, and she could do so much in 16 pages that it's just It's mind-boggling.
So good. I played a lot of video games too, so it was like, you know, Star Ocean 4 was just, yeah, amazing, and like, you know, the Final Fantasy games and stuff for like Super Nintendo, and, you know, the stuff for the Genesis, like Shining Force, and I always liked these games a lot, and I didn't really pick up on that they were from Japan, like I wasn't really paying attention to where they were from, but it was just
Clash
like...
Clash of Demon Head had like manga cutscenes and stuff like back in the day.
It's so like, and that was I guess my first exposure to it, but I didn't really know what it was, you know, so when I went to the store and I saw like, you know, Fantasy you start putting it together, but you have all these misconceptions about it, because then you're like, in Ranma, like, why is everyone left-handed? You didn't realize that they put the comics, like, I had no idea.
Like, did they ever actually put out Ranma like unflipped now or not?
No, I think they're planning to eventually. But first, they have to unflip Inuyasha. So.
Okay. Well, they started unflipping Inuyasha.
Yes,
in the middle.
In the fall.
Yeah. first they have like 50 zillion volumes of Inuyasha to unflip, and then they can get back to the much much better Ranma and flip that.
Ranma's a lot funnier, more imaginative, I think.
Maeda Makoto is really good, too.
Yeah.
And like one
she's my mom's age. And she's still doing comics. She's like the richest woman in Japan or something.
Yeah.
So I respect that.
Yeah, it was kind of like, friends tell you come for the science fiction and the giant robots and Ninja Scroll, and then stay for the sweet romantic comedies. And hopefully not the totally pervy romantic comedies.
Well, let's go for that too. And what was your first exposure?
Well, I was in high school, and it was in mathematics class.
Yes,
and a friend of mine bring this Akira.
Akira,
yes. And so I write everything, every Akira in mathematics, in this class.
You think like a book.
Yes, that was cool, but my teacher doesn't care about anything. So.
Now the cool thing would be actually get your teacher to start reading Akira too.
Yeah. What was your first exposure?
Well, I'm much older than these guys, so like the first thing that I'm really addicted to is like the Super Robo stuff, like the Mazingas and you know Getter Robos and those. Yeah, no, those are like super popular in Europe too. I still remember, you know, when I was a kid, you know, seeing all these robots fighting each other and you know like smashing buildings and stuff is like really mind-boggling. And then my mom started going like, these things are too violent, you can't read it anymore, you can't watch it anymore, and they shut down the TV all the time. So I grow older, and then, you know, like I started getting this obsession of getting back my childhood. Everybody who knows me know that, you know, like I have this whole basement of toys right now that I don't know what to do now. Since, you know, I just have a kid, and then my wife kind of started demanding me to get rid of some stuff. I get, you know, pretty obsessed of, you know, like getting back to looking at all these stuff, like, you know, the Kamen Riders, the Ultramans, and all those kind of things, which is like when I was a kid, it's like super popular.
Mm-hmm. Jason, what was your first exposure to the manga then? Mm-hmm.
Well, the first was anime, and that was Ranma 1/2, and followed immediately by Akira. So pretty much the two most iconic anime of the early 90s. The first manga era might have actually been Heroes Greenwood. Or either that or Battle Angel Alita. My friends were passing it around.
What did you like about it?
I loved the freshness of the art and like the, you know, the like cartooniness of the faces and the detail of the backgrounds and the worlds, you know, and stuff like Nausicaa, you know. And I also, you know, I loved the, like I said, I loved the you know, the emotional touch of Maison Ikkoku. When I had this moment where I was watching Maison Ikkoku and I was like, my God, I'm watching a soap opera. I can't be watching a soap opera. I'm like a hardcore like science fiction and horror nerd. What the hell? And then I felt really ashamed, but then I was like,
So obviously you guys all read manga more than maybe the average person. If you had to pick one or two that you would recommend to people here in this room that you're currently reading now or you think they is essential reading, what would you recommend?
I'll start. Nana by Aizawa. Oh, you're going to do Emma.
I know.
Nana is really good. It was a huge influence on me. I read it in French like 8-9 years ago, maybe, the first few volumes. And It's basically a soap opera, but it's the first manga that I read that was kind of about 20-somethings rather than about high school. So it gets like really intense in later volumes, and it's just kind of realistic in a weird way that I didn't expect. So I really like that. And the other one that's going right now is 20th Century Boys, which I think is like one of the best manga ever.
Could you please explain what it's about?
It's so hard to explain. It takes place in multiple time periods. It's about these dudes in like the late 90s that are like kind of struggling. They're like in their 30s, and then it's also about their childhood, and it's also about the future and something bad might happen. And it becomes just the most epic like drama, like sci-fi thing like ever. It's so good.
Volume 1 and 2 out now.
1 and 2.
Yeah, I read Nana too, and I really liked how it was like, you know, when you first move out and you're moving on your own, it's like you have to get the electric turned on, you have to get the gas turned on. Monday, I mean, they go through all this stuff, and it got a little too dramatic.
Yeah, it gets a little too much at the end, but
I really liked the first part of the story.
I liked up to like, 8 or 9, I think it was really good.
Yeah, my favorite comic from Japan is called Emma, and I gush about this comic all the time, but I can't, like, contain it. It's so good. It's like, if you like Jane Austen, like, this is like a Jane Austen book for, you know, manga or comics. I mean, anyone would read this. I mean, it's like, it's set in the 1800s in London, and it's the story of like a maid who falls in love with an upper class gentleman. But it's so, and this is the kind of sad part about a manga, and you say like, oh, it's a Japanese comic about maids, you automatically think something fetishy and something weird. But it's totally, I mean, it's not, you know, it's like really so well researched. And so, I mean, she structures, the way she structured society and the way she like, just all her characters, it was just amazing. So you have to go read. It's only 8 volumes too, so it's not gonna like break the bank, you know?
when we were in France, we found Rose of Versailles, which is not translated into English. It's the best thing ever. It's so good. Yes. And I wish someone would translate it. Like, all this Tezuka, no Rose of Versailles.
Apparently
it's like, it's in 2 books, like this big. I think it was like 10 volumes. And it's a retelling of the story of Marie Antoinette, except with a gender-bending caption of the card. It's like a girl pretends to be a boy named Oscar, and it's like the most amazing thing ever from the 70s.
I love that.
So good.
That's a good reason to learn French.
Yeah.
For that reason, the name Oscar is very romantic in Japan.
Yeah.
You don't say it's
like a book, Sesame Street.
Yeah, exactly.
Eric, would you like to?
It would be kind of weird if I said that, you know, I like reading the books that I publish, because the reason why I picked them, because we are a little different. We are like almost like a boutique publisher, that we really handpick stuff, you know, that I really like personally. I think that is good for the market here, good for the audience here to publish, rather than just go and get anything that I think is going to make money.
That's good though, right?
You know, and you know, one of the books that I got really hooked with is actually this book called 1520. It's a very, very special project for me, because this book's actually from Hong Kong, which is where I come from. So this is not exactly a Japanese manga, but these guys that I met, you know, I met them a few times, and then they showed me the book, and I actually read the book. The premise is very interesting, very original, that, you know, the book's about 2 kids that somehow they got linked up by a curse. They are both 15 years old kids, but then the curse actually make them share 20 years of age. So when one of the boys, you know, becomes, you know, 15 year old, that the girl actually got shrink down to 5, and vice versa. So they actually have to go through different challenges to find out a cure to this problem. And you know, during the adventures, they have to solve different problems. So sometimes, you know, one of them has to be older, one of them has to be younger, and it's like a really cute story, and it's a really, you know, interesting premise that I've never seen before. And thus, you know, they actually win one of the international manga awards last year, and that's why I bring this book in. For stuff that I don't publish, I have been pretty addicted to the first part of Death Note, which I think is like really, really cool. It's something really different that you actually get an antagonist, you know, as the main character. You know, he's actually the bad guy, he's not the good guy. But he believes that he's a good guy, of course. And the way they actually deal with each other, you know, the whole kind of detective kind of you know, storyline. This is really, really engaging, up to a point.
Everyone
is like, you know, when the climax goes, and then you kind of feel that, okay, well, the editor wants this book to keep going because it's selling, and then it kind of drags on.
Like in every manga.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sometimes success is a problem. And what would you like to share among us?
Well, my favorite manga artist is Taiyo Matsumoto. He's well known for Black and White, and there is an adaptation of Black and White in animation by Deacon Kinkuri. And my favorite work from him is Ping Pong. It's a teenager.
Yeah. Table tennis.
Yes, and the storytelling is amazing, very poetic and very kind of a philosophic stuff about teenagers, and I love it.
Yeah, Ping Pong's not available in English yet, I don't believe, but the movie is available. Hopefully,
It's really good.
I love the movie too. Jason, I'll rattle off a little list if it's okay. Antique Bakery, it's an incredible manga, changed my life. Kafumi Yoshinaga, her book Flower of Life is very good as well. Really great character writing, and like unpredictable plots in a way I've never seen before in manga.
Can you explain the plot for people?
Oh, Antique Bakery is a plot manga about it's a manga about four hot guys who run a bakery. One of them is gay, and he's been blacklisted from every bakery. Wherever he goes, men are uncontrollably attracted to him. It always causes a working relationship to fall apart, and he gets fired. But he, one of the guys on staff is immune to his charms, and so I mentioned it at one. And so he's able to sort of work it out. It's just really good. It's really hilarious. I like cooking manga a lot. I mean, manga is a visual medium, and food is, you know, it sucks to eat food that looks bad, so, you know, food is also a visual medium. Oishinbo is good. I also have a soft spot for Iron Walk Jan, which is this totally insane, stupid fighting manga about cooking. In which it's about Chinese cooking, and people are always like yelling in each other's faces, and like, you know, it's kind of like Hell's Kitchen that was shown in the manga.
Things are like Hell's Kitchen crosses with Iron Chef type of thing.
Yes, yeah.
Can you say Oishinbo, because maybe not everyone has read
Oishinbo? Is a very old school manga from the 80s, which is a pretty much a plotless manga about food and cooking, sake, and different aspects of Japanese food. It's about this food critic who wanders Japan, trying to produce the ultimate menu and like analyzing different foods. And it's a curiosity. I can't say it's as, you know, it doesn't warm my heart as much as Antique Bakery or Iron Walk Jan, but it's quite good. I also Children of the Sea from Viz, beautiful.
That's coming out in June.
Lovely artwork of nature and this very bizarre, like mysterious, sort of almost Miyazaki-like story. All the manga these people mentioned, of course, and there's another manga Blackjack, definitely Sam Tezuka's best manga, by far.
Yeah.
Since we have a lot of creators here at PCAP, maybe if I can ask some of the creators, looking back on your early days, what was a beginner's mistake that you made that you can share with the audience that you would tell them never ever do as you make the comics world? Or would you like to share any just general advice for comics creators? Next time, Brian?
Do you have anything, Becky?
I do.
You go first.
Okay, one of the first things that I did when I, you know, I was reading a lot of X-Men and a lot of Japanese comics when I was, you know, in middle and high school. So, of course, when, you know, I go to make my comic, it's like a 400-page, like, epic that has, like, no end in sight, and I'm drawing it, and, you know, you apply to colleges and you think, like, oh, I'll just continue this epic comic. Well, it's not going to happen. I have some friends who are doing, like, epic stories that they had from, like, when they were kids. But for the most part, I think, you know, generally when creators first start, you want to start small, you know, and work your way up. Don't just jump into, like, the biggest thing that you can think of. I kind of found out the hard way. After 400 pages later, you know?
Yeah, drawing comics takes way more time than you can ever imagine when you're like a teenager.
Yeah. And you look at these Japanese comics and you're like, oh, I want to make like a 50-volume like epic comic about, you know.
Well, they have like 8 assistants.
Yeah. And you don't realize that. Like, I had no idea. And, you know, I was in...
Yeah. And they have no life. Like, literally, like, they just slave in a room. Like, you look at their schedule.
We're really lucky.
We still have no life.
Oh, we still have no life.
No, we have more.
We're way better than...
We have more free time, I think. Yeah. I have free time, at least.
They're like, they eat like while they're still drawing and things like that. Sleep while they're
still drawing. Well, that's why those instant ramen noodles so popular in Japan. You know, they only have 3 minutes to cook this thing and then 1 minute to cook it down and then next.
Apparently, there's a saying, if you're getting enough exercise, you're not a good manga artist.
Maybe that's why Tezuka died at 60. Sorry. It all didn't occur to me. Brian, you'd like to share your thoughts.
I don't know if I really have any other major stuff. I guess the other thing I see a lot of like manga readers doing when they start trying to make comics is starting off a story like with a girl running late for school with toast in her mouth kind of thing. Like just like Jason was saying, like falling back on sort of the tropes of manga, like all the little generic things that are just like so amazing and cool when you first learn about manga. But they're not really like your life experience. They're just what you've read already in the manga. So it's how I came to do work that I like, I guess, is by applying my own life to like sort of manga. And you know, so my comic's kind of like about a guy from Toronto and like was a crappy life like how I had. So it's you know, he doesn't run like your school with us as well. Although that would be kind of cute.
Eric, would you maybe share a statement artists who come to you?
Basically, you know, like I work with like all sorts of different artists. I manage about 30 different artists every day on work, and then I keep on telling them, you know, like you have to be realistic about things, because you know when everybody started off, you know, like. I heard all these people coming to me with portfolios going like, look at this Wolverine that I did, you know, look at this, you know, like a Dragon Ball that I did. And it's like, yeah, you know, like, and they keep on doing all these things that they really like, but then when they become an actual, you know, mangaka or comic artist, basically there are a lot of other things that you have to draw too that, you know, you might not like. Like, for example, all these other side characters, all these talking scenes, you know, all these buildings, all those kind of things. So, you know, like it's not necessary that you gotta draw Wolverine jumping every single panel. Which actually one of the guys goes like, you know, yeah, you know, I love Wolverine and I would draw it and over again. I said, yeah, but then what about if this issue has no Wolverine in it? What are you gonna do? You know? And pretty much a lot of people go like, you know, well, I can do this all day. I can do this all day. But then it's like, yes, but then please do schedule your time to at least go to the bathroom once in a while. You know, so like these are some of the things that, you know, like being passionate about work is one thing. But then I think everybody has to be realistic as to, you know, what your daily life is, making sure that, you know, you do have a life while you work on, you know, the stuff that you really like to work on.
Would you like to share your advice?
Yes. Well, before I have my first contract, I didn't do a lot of pages. And I think during 2 years, I was looking for a publisher, and I drew like maybe 10 pages, and I think I lost my time during this time. And well, I think the most important is to draw a lot of pages, anything but to practice.
Get a part-time job. Get a job that you can take enough. You have enough time to work while you're, you know, you have time to draw while you're, you know, working. Also, be consistent and keep putting your, you know, keep producing material, you know, so that people, you don't vanish off people's radars. Although this is just a personal anecdote, I did a webcomic called The Stiff, and the way I did it was, I originally intended to do it consistently, but how it ended up was I would burn really hard, like 3 pages a week for 6 months, and then I'd be like, phew, well, I gotta take a break and figure out what's gonna happen in the next chapter, and then I'd like pause for like a month, and then start up again. But in that month's time, you know, everyone else is like, what the hell, this sucks. And, you know, it's hard to get people interested again once you, you know, once you start taking breaks of, like, a month or 6 months or anything.
Yeah, like, you know, the RSS feed starts getting really stale. You're like, maybe I should get rid of this one.
Yeah.
So let's, I guess, before we wrap it up and open up the questions, I want to give you guys all a moment to pimp your latest project. Please pimp.
This is my latest book. It's shiny. and it's called Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe. And there's also a movie being made of Scott Pilgrim right now in Toronto. So it's good times, I guess.
I'm doing 6 new issues of Demo with Brian Wood. It's going to come out from Vertigo. I'm not sure when, whatever they say. And Dark Horse is printing a book I did with Fabio Luna and Gabriel Ba from Brazil, and Vizio Zelos from Greece. It's called Pichu. And they're going to be printing a hardcover version of it in the summer. So we had self-published it last year, and we liked it. What else? I think that's it.
We still, you know, heavily promoting, you know, the Korean manhwa line, which is a little different than Japanese manga, being, you know, more safe in terms of content for the American audiences, and also because Korean actually reads the same way as American people read, so the book is like open up this side, but it's actually not flipped. It's originally intended to be that way. As I said, I'm very proud of 1520. I really think that everybody should, you know, if you have a chance, check it out. And then we just launched the Kids Manga line, which is something that is very, very important to me, because, as I said, I just got a kid. I want to do something that can teach kids how to read comic, how to read manga, and you know, to prep them for, you know, Naruto or something else later on. Otherwise, you know, Udon's still working on the Street Fighter comic books and doing a lot of other projects for a lot of different publishers.
I'm working on a story, it's a teen drama, and it's a kind of mix between Lord of the Flies and A Night of the Living Dead and Harry Potter a little bit, and well, it's manga-like.
But, when's it coming up?
It's about January, I think.
Yeah. And would you
want to
show the books that you did
right with you? This is my first one, and this is a book I have write. It's more French.
Could you maybe explain the story, because maybe not everyone's familiar?
Yeah, okay. The first one is, it's a story about a little girl. She doesn't have any friends, and she imagines this bird is like, we don't know if it is real or not, it's the first time, but she find a way to be happy in this other world, and kind of sad story. My sister cry, and
wow, that's big.
Well, and the second one is about it's kind of a fake autobiography about me, but I met this girl, but she's older.
Pick your project.
I'm doing a book with an artist friend of mine from Delray next year. It's called King of RPGs, and it's kind of a Dungeons and Dragons Hikaru no Go mashup with manga style comics. It's about a young boy who wants to become the greatest dungeon master in the world, and his friend who is addicted to World of Warfare, and. So yeah, that's coming out early next year. I'm also working on a paranormal romance with another friend of mine. So yes, those are my 2 things.
I think maybe we have time for 1 or 2 questions. Anyone want to pop in? Please.
I was just wondering what your experience has been in terms of how creative you can be when you're working with a publisher. And also, I think you mentioned working with an editor, and I was just wondering if you meant like Like, are they editing the storyline, or are they more content editing, or copy editing?
I think it depends on what publisher you're working with. Generally, larger publishers, I think, are more hands-on because there's more money invested in it. And I think smaller publishers, they kind of just let the creators, you know, do kind of what you want. You know, when I worked at Tokyo Pop, my editor wouldn't edit me unless I would be like, I need help. What do I do? And he would be like, I'd be like, give me suggestions for this scene because it's not working. But, you know, at Vertigo, I worked with Shelley Bond, and she's a great editor. She was very, like, hands-on with the story and with, you know, everything from the logo design to, I mean, she had input everywhere. So, and now I'm working with Will Dennis on Demo, and he's actually pretty hands-off, I think, because, well, they kind of trust me, I guess, with this book. But I think it depends on the editor, it depends on the story, how you approach it.
It
depends on you, yeah.
Yeah, it very depends, because we as a publisher, and me being, you know, the editor-in-chief in the company, we always look at different people to, you know, to have different ways of dealing with them, because, you know, some of the creators are more, you know, hardcore on, you know, I'm going to do this, I don't care, no matter what, I'm going to do this. Then, you know, it's very hard to convince them to change, but if their stuff is like good enough, then that's fine. If something is like really, really like off, then you really have to tell them, you cannot do this, you know, this cannot go. Like, for example, if you're doing a kid's book and you started doing nudity in it, then you can't do it, right? Yeah, but then he's like, I really want to do this. No, you can't do this. You know, and that is where we draw the line. But most of the time, you know, as an editor, we try to let the creative juice flow with the creators first. Because, you know, the reason why, at least within Udon, the reason why we are working with those creators is because we respect them. We know that, you know, they're putting out good stuff.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, as an editor, I love reading comics, but it drives me crazy when I see a great comic and it has, like, spelling mistakes and stuff. So,
that, yeah.
That should be.
That is a copy editor's job, but then, you know, like, we went through so many books so fast. Publishing schedule and all those kind of things, it's like normally sometimes those are human errors.
Yeah.
And I do admit that, you know, like some of our books do have those kind of errors too.
My publisher only had 3 employees for like the first several years of the series, so there were some typos, but we've since gotten someone who actually finds typos. But yeah, it was pretty low budget at first.
I just did a script for Buffy recently, and that comes out in June, and I wasn't the artist, I was just the writer on it, and I worked with Scott Alley on that, and because it's a licensed book, I mean, it has to go back to Joss Whedon and everything has to be approved. I got 5 pages of notes and corrections, and I mean, a lot of it was little things, like small things about the dialogue and things that I could tweak, but I mean, it was really like, you, as a creator, you have to be really open to, you know, looking at your stuff objectively, and when an editor is like, change this, it doesn't mean because you suck, it's just because, you know, you have room for improvement, like always. So I think it's frustrating to me to, I teach now at SVA, and some of my students, you know, a few of them you'd run into, they'd be like, kind of adverse to hearing the bad things about their work, the critiques, but I think as a creator, it's really important to learn how to take a critique and take edits and learn how to, like, you know, not mine.
Yeah. I used to be like total whiner. Like, I think that everything I did was like pure gold, like from the first draft. And I have since come to learn that it's not.
I think we have time for one short question. Anyone want to? Please.
I'm a big fan of Felipe Smith, who did MBQ, and he's like the first person who got published like in the mainstream Japanese weekly. So I was just curious, like, how much you guys think about, you have aspirations to be published internationally, either like when you're actually writing your stories, or how important is that to be published either in Asia or anywhere in Europe?
There's a Polish edition of my first book.
I just
found out Scott Pilgrim's getting published in Brazil.
That's sweet.
I think it's Portuguese in Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have any aspiration to be like a weekly Japanese comic artist because they would kill me. I have cats that I have to feed. But no, I think, you know, I'll have foreign editions and stuff, and that'll be really fun to see all the different covers and things. I want to get a picture in France because I like France. And
yeah, I think if I ever want to do a comic in Japan, I would pitch to a Japanese publisher.
Yeah.
I think I'm okay with where I'm totally cool doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I think the key for us creators is just to do something that we feel comfortable, we like about it, rather than looking at it being like, okay, because we have to, you know, we have to set the appeal for the other markets, we have to do this. Then it kind of loses our main focus on why we're doing this.
I think it would be a real trial by fire. I think it would really learn a lot and be really challenging to work for a Japanese publisher. I mean, I heard a story of Felipe Smith, literally melting apart under the stress of what he's doing, producing 40 or 50 pages a month, which isn't that high by manga standards. But he only recently got an assistant, But I think it'd be an amazing experience in terms of having work licensed overseas. I don't think obviously that can't be the first concern. The first concern is to make people actually think it's worth reading in English.
Is your work available in English, by the way?
No.
It will be?
I don't know.
I hope so. Hopefully before I struggle too much. Well, I think that's all the time we have here. Thank you all for coming.